Good morning, everybody. My name is Tom Scott, chairman of the Nantucket Project. I'm with RPEDI as always. Today I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. I'll talk more about that in a moment. But we're joined today by Stacy Woodland. Stacy is the CEO of YWCA Tri-County Area. She's been that since 2014. Stacy, give us some towns. I know Pottstown is in your area.
So all of Montgomery County. We're all of Montgomery County, a lot of Chester County, and some of Berks County. Pottstown is the westernmost tip of Montgomery County, and Montgomery County is a huge county. It's the third largest county in Pennsylvania, and has a populace larger than Vermont, right? So it's a pretty big county. And then we're moving east to really be able to offer some programming in Philadelphia also. So we're growing.
Programs are growing. Well, Stacy, what I was going to say is you and I were on a call on Friday.
Yeah.
And, you know, I heard a bit of your story, and I just felt it would be really important to share with everybody. So I want to dive in on that. But before I do, just a quick update. So yesterday I was in Hannibal, Missouri. Hannibal is the birthplace of Mark Twain. And when we, as I said yesterday, when I came down in the hotel, it was fully open for business. You know, the buffet was open. I mean, the whole place was kind of jumping. And then when you cross, it's county lines here. As you cross the county and you come in, we spent some time in Ferguson yesterday, and then we came into the city here, and totally different story. You know, hotels, many of the hotels are shut. The restaurants, you know, the occasional Starbucks is open, but not all of them. So from county to county, a very different situation. And the city is very quiet. I mean, we're right, as you can see, we're downtown at the Arch. And then every now and again, a car goes by. But by and large, on a regular business day, there's really not a lot going on. Some of you may know, some of you may not, but I'm doing a trip where we started in northern Minnesota, right at the source of the Mississippi. And we're going to go all the way to New Orleans, making stops along the way, making observations, talking to people, taking the show with us on the road. Maybe later in the show, I'll give you other pieces of the update, but I just wanted to get a sense of where we are. So, Stacy, I mentioned Friday, you and I were on a call. It's called Our Keepers, and it's essentially leaders of different kinds in different areas sharing. You could fill me in, but, you know, best practices, emotional support, friendship, fellowship. Am I getting it right? About right.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the Keepers, we were at the Nantucket Project in this past September. And I think from that, we really all forged a strong alliance and continue to figure out ways to connect our work if it's geographically possible or virtually possible. And then since the pandemic started and the closures, we've really been meeting weekly to offer that emotional support for each other and figure out and help each other through some of the, you know, filling out the PPP or what should we be doing as nonprofit leaders to save our nonprofits from what feels like a very tenuous position right now.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I see repeatedly is that the not-for-profit sector has been hit really hard.
Right.
And it's sort of across the board. And I think a lot of people on all sides, I mean, are sorting through a process of like trying to figure all this out. And it was tough to hear some of the stories you guys shared the other day. You know, a lot going on. And in many parts of the country, we had a group from Montana, right? That was also on the call.
That was yes.
Yeah. And RP, I just felt it would be good for us to get a conversation today about some of these different areas. Stacy, one of the things you talked about was school. Were they your grandchildren you were describing? And tell us about that. Tell us what's happening in your neck of the woods.
The two stark things that hit us was, one, Pottstown School District hadn't started school yet. Everybody else around, they've been in school since March. And so we started saying like...
Stacy, when is this? When you say they hadn't started, this is back like a month or so ago or...
So it was the last week of April when I realized school hadn't started and no virtual school had started in the Pottstown School District. It was the last week of April.
Unbelievable.
So
the schools were effectively closed for 2 months.
Yes.
Even virtually.
Right. And so there had been, the school district wasn't equipped to do distance learning at all. They got a donation, and then they were able to purchase iPads and I think Chromebooks. And so the distribution of that took a couple of weeks. And now they were finally ready to start. They just started last week. So when we were on the call on Friday, Tom, they had just started on that previous Monday.
2 months of no education.
None.
2 months of parents being not even able to put their kids in front of the computer for 1 or 2 hours a day. 2 months of them all of a sudden having to not only be home confined, but try to school their children.
Absolutely. And it's already a $14 million underfunded school district, right? So they're already underfunded. Pennsylvania has a funding system for school districts that dates back to the 1800s. And so there is a movement afoot that the YW is a strong supporter of, that for the fair funding of school districts, and we're working on that. But, you know, $15 million, and they're already, like, there are 500 school districts, there are exactly 500 school districts in Pennsylvania. And sadly, Pottstown, while it's a lovely community, it often is ranked in the 490s of the 500 school districts annually, so every year. And so when you think about that, and you think about those children, that they're already here, and then you think about how the achievement gap is widening when they haven't had any kind of education for these last 2 months. And then when you think that it's a community of color. So how are we gonna support that, right? So like our mission lets us have the flexibility to say, so listen, we can't be on here doing like little STEM stuff with girls and having girls circle. Like, we're gonna have to step into this gap and do the best that we can. We're fortunate that our government program, it's funded a lot by the United Way of Greater Philadelphia and Southern New Jersey, but also the Pottstown Health and Wellness Foundation in our community. And it's a wonderful group of former teachers and educators. And so we're trying to figure out, all right, so listen, we're gonna have to wrap our arms around this situation and do our best to support these kids. The other part is that when you're serving girls, especially high school girls, the other thing that we see is they have now become the caregivers of their household, right? Yeah. Their parents are essential workers, a lot of them. And so they're working in the Walmarts and the Targets and then the stores and then their home health aides. And so we see, you know, one little girl, 15 years old, she's got three younger siblings. Like, it is her responsibility to care for her siblings, to prepare the meals. Her mom's working all the time. When she was sharing that there wasn't food in the house, really, and we were like, oh, well, so, you know, there's all this collaboration in the community to get food to families. But she couldn't pick up the food herself because she doesn't have ID. She doesn't have these things, right? And so we realized there are all these families who have, there are things happening in the community to support families like hers, but there's no mechanism to make sure that it happens. And so then we re-energized our food distribution to make sure that we don't care who comes to pick it up. We're gonna make sure that you can get food in your house and we'll deliver it if we have to. So, I mean, I think when you think about what happens to girls especially, that even now that school has started for her, I don't know how she's going to be able to do her own schoolwork, watch three young kids, prepare the meals, take care of the house, keep her siblings safe in the house. Like, it's hard for parents, you know? And so I just think that we are now really trying to rethink how are we going to support the dignity for these girls and these young people in the absence of their education and then and what has become this new home life for them.
Daisy, a lot of the stuff you just spoke about, maybe all the stuff you just outlined that you're doing right now, you weren't doing 2 months ago.
Not at all.
Right? You've had to completely redo your organization.
Absolutely.
Create virtual versions of what you were doing before, and then do all these other things you were never doing before. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
And so I have to believe the work has been intense.
Very.
Right? I mean, you've got to be, can you compare it to anything? How would you describe it?
So I would describe it as, a pride swallowing siege on what we thought were the most important pieces of our work and what have now become the most important pieces of our work. I think when there's a crisis, the most important thing is to put people first. And for me, as the leader of the organization, like I had to make decisions about which people am I gonna put first? Do I put staff first? Do I put our constituents first? How do I prioritize the resources that we have with making sure that we're doing what we need to do? I think, as an organization dedicated to the elimination of racism, I always feel a special need to examine what we're doing to make sure that we aren't in any way unintentionally perpetuating any kind of institutional racism. And so, when we, on March 12th, when the governor said close everything down, there's a bunch of us that walk out, we grab our little laptops, we walk out of work, and we know we can go home and we can keep doing our work, and we're gonna still keep getting paid. But our early education teachers, our adult education instructors, our youth empowerment team, all of the front-facing people, their work shifted dramatically. And so I was so worried that I was going to create some haves and have nots that I was like, listen, you can't just go do your work. Like, we've got to figure out how everybody is going to have work so that everybody can continue to be paid so that we can take care of these families. And then if I take care of the staff, then the staff can take care of the constituents. Right. And so that became like our first week of figuring out what are we going to do to level the playing field so that the early education teachers had work. So we created all of this online. Really the original catalyst of it was, I want to keep these people working because I want to have a way to keep paying them. I want to be able to say to all the funding streams, hey, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, keep the money coming. And so we were able to say that, I haven't had to lay off or furlough one person, and I'm thankful, and it's not a lot of people, but it's 74 people, so I'm thrilled that we all,
wow.
The struggle has been having enough technology to send everybody off with ways to connect online. Like, while I can level the playing field of work to the best of my ability, I can't level people's homes. I can't level their access, right? We were requiring all this professional development and doing all these things because we wanted to open our early education center stronger than we closed it. And then, teachers, some of the teachers were saying, like, I can't do this. I have my own children. I can't sit in front of a computer all day. And then I had teachers share, listen, work was my safe place. I'm not safe in my home all day long. I have to be careful with my husband, I have to be careful for my children. And so, we had to continually pivot, because the second part of our mission is empowering women. And so making sure that I'm not creating a situation that endangers women versus empowers them is also a very slippery slope, right? And so it's just been a constant evolution of, all right, this just happened. Let's figure out how we're gonna shift so that we can support that.
Stacey, how do you feel? I heard a little bit of frustration the other day, but, and I know that's a big question. There's a lot going on.
I was gonna ask
generally, like, just tell us how you feel.
Well, I think, So I think what has happened most recently in the last 3 weeks, I have three staff members who have coronavirus. One of which, who is a wonderful friend of mine, who until last week was on a ventilator and in a coma. She is beginning to improve, and I'm so thankful for that. I think, you know, Pottstown is a little bit away from some of the hubbub, Montgomery County was deemed the epicenter of the outbreak in Pennsylvania, but Pottstown was a little bit away from it. And now that we're starting to slow down in other parts of the county, Pottstown is starting to heat up. And so I think if you're asking me how I feel, I'm worried because I think that they didn't have to adopt all of the stringent things that in the other parts of the county, like we did in my community, everybody had masks, everybody was staying away, you know. And now I think I'm worried. And I'm scared that I think we're going to be fine. I think the YW Tri-County area is going to be fine because we're going to continuously evaluate how we can support our people. But I think, you know, it's a big responsibility to be in charge of a 112-year-old organization and try to do what's right for the people and then try to balance what's right for the organization. Because at the end of it, I don't want 6 months to wipe out 112 years of history and support and everything the YW has been in the Pottstown community. So I know that was a lot of words, but I think I feel hopeful.
That's helpful.
But I think I'm worried.
RP, when I was on the call the other day, and Stacy, correct me if you think I'm off at all. You know, I heard a lot of frustration for sure. There was a number of people who sort of spoke of the $1,200 checks they got as, what the hell am I going to do with that? Or how's that going to help me kind of thing. As I was listening, one of the thoughts that came to mind was just the overwhelming scope of the challenge, because it's just so big, so big. And, you know, but ignoring the politics of it as best we can. I'm curious, RP, how you think about, because what I was hearing was a lot of input where if I was working in the government, I'd want to know all this. On one hand, and I would want to know it. However, I would also imagine that it's coming so fast and furious and big that it's got to be overwhelming for them in a way as well. And one, Stacy, am I going to characterize that right? I mean, people are very, very frustrated with the government.
Yes.
And that's both state, local, federal, it's all of them, yes?
Yes, I think so. And I think, you know, if I try to think about people in groups, right? Because it's a lot of times like similar groups think similarly. So, you know, my son and his wife, they're millennials, right? They're in their 30s. My son is a medical student, but they have two little girls. And now my daughter-in-law, she's working from home. The daycare's closed, right? Like they're okay, but they are struggling. They are struggling. And then when I'm thinking about the younger early education teachers with young children and trying to balance all that it is, they are struggling. And so I think sometimes there's a lack of information about who to be mad at, right? Like, I don't even know how this happened, but I know it's happening to me. I don't know what's going to make it better. So like we, you know, as some parts of Pennsylvania, not the southeastern part, but as some parts of Pennsylvania begin to reopen, they're in that yellow phase that Governor Wolf designed and described. We're starting to plan for, okay, what will a yellow phase for us look like? And trying to have as much input from everybody as possible is, you know, like, so what would it take for you to feel safe? What would it take for you to feel safe? Many of the teachers have children in the center. What would it take for you to feel safe that your children come? There's no way to socially distance in an early education center. You're not going to keep toddlers 6 feet apart, right? Now that there's more things coming out that children are sick, like it's just, you know, it's scary, and it's there's you know, there's not going to be an unlimited amount of time that I would be able to continue to keep every single person on the payroll, right? Like, yeah. Every well runs dry. And so, I'm not one of those people that's holding up a sign saying, open us up. But I'm also, you know, concerned about how long can we stay closed? And what it's doing.
So RP, that seems to be the heart of it, right? I mean, there's like a big question.
Stacey, who to be mad at and who to thank God for? And who and to thank God for you and the realization as we're going through this conversation about first how critical schools are. What a cornerstone they are for getting everything working properly. I don't think a lot of us quite realized it till it was gone. How critical YMCAs, YWCAs are. That's all fine. But without leaders like you who are making this move in real time, who are trying to place that cornerstone into, you know, quicksand, trying to figure out where it goes, it all falls apart. And thank you. So I'm sort of overwhelmed that we've hit on a ton of critical issues, and I kind of amazing that you end up with that you end up at this point about, you know, almost losing a dear friend of yours. By the way, the fact that your friend got off a ventilator and out of a coma and looks like they're heading for wellness is statistically profound, right? Getting on a ventilator is really bad news. So thank God for that. But the fact that you, amidst that, are also saying, we got to figure out how we're going to get back to work, right? And how we're going to be able to, you know, we use the very aseptic term, or I use the very aseptic term of the velocity of money. You know, we have to sort of get the economy moving. It's kind of profound. So given that you're in this foxhole, you know, taking incoming rounds consistently, and you're thinking about that. So I don't know, I'm kind of overwhelmed with thanks. So many questions. One, can I just ask a question about your plans? Mm-hmm. You live in a multi-generational household.
Yeah.
I don't know how old that means. Does that mean your parents are home?
No, it means, so my daughter who's—
Your grandkids are there.
Right, and then my grandchildren, yep, and her husband.
Okay, so you're not old enough that you're in the higher risk brackets.
I am. I'm 56.
Oh, you don't look like it. Okay. All right. Well, then you just got there at 55 plus. And you're already putting yourself at risk, though. You're out working with folks, it sounds like, with some regularity. I don't imagine you're sitting behind that desk all day.
No. So, you know, I do my best to keep safe because I'm coming home to my grandsons Yes, I have to be out making some decisions and making some things happen and making coordinating efforts for sure. I mean, a lot of it can be done virtually, but, you know, I'd probably go into the YW a couple of times a week for sure. And we are doing everything that we can to be socially distant and you know, staying masked up and all those things, but it requires some in-person. Listen, I'm a pain in the ass, right? And so sometimes, you know, you got to be present with somebody to show them how much of a pain in the ass you're gonna be. So that's one of those things, I think. You know, it's the nature of the beast, though. I think that to be able to show people how much you're willing, that you're going to be digging in the trenches with them, I think helps a lot.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I like this expression, pride swallowing siege on what we thought were the most critical pieces of our work. I think I had a couple words I might have got wrong, but at the beginning I didn't. Pride swallowing siege. And you're 60 days into it. I think that's about the math, something like that. You almost lost a friend. And if every leader was doing as well as you appear to be doing, and I mean every leader from the top to the bottom, and we know some aren't, then we'd be in a way better position. Like, what, let's just talk about some tactics. Like, how can other leaders, what can they learn from you? And I mean, literally day to day, how do you keep your foot, one foot in front of the other? You're working in environments profoundly harder, probably than most people who watch this, just to be clear. Most people who watch this are, I would suspect, are not in the environment you're in. They don't have the challenges that you have. Not all, but most. But even those folks are having, you know, I know all of us are having a real hard time with this. What can we learn anything from you, like you personally, on how you're able to keep getting to the fight?
So I think that my biggest mantra is putting people first, right? And so if I can put people first, and that last part of YW's mission, dignity for all, so I'm putting people first and I'm always focused on how am I gonna help maintain their dignity or improve the dignity that they have. So I think it's the thing that really I can pivot off of anything that we do, right? I think when Tom and I were on the call on Friday, we were talking, one of the leaders in the Keepers, she runs the Center for Work and Families, which does taxes for everybody. And so she was really upset in the previous call saying how most of the COVID funding was going toward hunger relief and how frustrating that is.
Going to what relief?
Hunger relief.
Hunger relief.
Right. But then when you really, and that's absolutely right. The first thing is you have to make sure people are going to have food to eat. But then secondarily, right, like it's the teach the people to, give the people ability to fish, right? Give them a fishing rod. They have to have money so that they have to. So her being able to help people do their taxes is connected to that stimulus money. And so her not being able to do that program and her not qualifying for COVID dollars and her not being able to help people who didn't file last year or whatever is a direct relation to who's able to access dollars. So I think, you know, when we just start to think about putting people first, you have to think about, all right, so first I got to prioritize my team so that they can continue to prioritize our people. And then I got to help them walk the walk. Like, what is it that people need the most? Okay, so this, we don't do that, we do that. How can we collaborate? So like I didn't know Mary before I went to the Nantucket Project last year. We now are a Pottstown site for her program, and it works beautifully. It worked beautifully until we ended, and we were loving it, and as were our constituents. Like, we just a value add. And so I think I would say to any leader, like, put your people first, whatever that means. I think, you know, I'm not saying this about myself, but I am saying that being true leadership gets revealed in a crisis.
Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it?
Right? And so people who aren't putting their people first, that gets revealed too. Because if you're not a leader of people, then what are you a leader of? So
yeah, putting people first. And like, then there's two, one side we've heard from some other guests in the show has been around how putting people first in service can, you know, to some extent, you know, deaden you to your own pain and your own crisis, right? You're focusing on them. You're outwardly focused and you can move ahead with that kind of pull. And the other idea of putting people first, you know, the other side of that equation, or another way of looking at that, is exactly what you're saying about, you know, taking care of your team, ensuring they have the tools they need to do their work. And I think that's brilliant. I want to ask one other question, and there's no answer that I know of, but I think I'd be remiss not to ask. I read an article yesterday that was perhaps one of the most disturbing that I've read in this whole pandemic. And it says, we talked about it briefly yesterday, a pilot study by Rubix Life Sciences, a biotech research firm, compared the severity of COVID-19 symptoms exhibited by more than 27,000 patients during hospital visits in 7 states. Okay, so call it a big study by a reputable business.
Okay.
The study, which has not gone through peer review, and that's a big deal, showed that black patients were 6 times less likely to be treated or tested than white patients. We also know that, we don't know, but it appears that just on a biological basis, a virological basis, this virus might fall unevenly on African Americans as well. We certainly know it falls unevenly on people by age. So we have you've mentioned a number of times that one of the missions of your organization is to defeat racism. And here we are with a disease that appears to be going right through our racial fault lines.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a question. I don't know what that is. I don't know if we can do anything about it. I wonder if you have any thoughts.
They're not politically correct thoughts, but I will say, some of my thoughts are that the fact that it is decimating communities of color so effectively allows people to stand up with signs and say, reopen the things, because communities of color have often been, the country hasn't cared as much about them. And so as an American and as a person who cares a lot about people that I might never meet, it's a sword in our hearts, because what it says is, you know, like most of the time it's clear you don't care about us, right? The policies, the things, like most of the time it's really clear that we're not a priority. Maybe that's it, that we're not a priority. But I think now it's, you really don't care about us. Like, you really don't care about us, because I think if it were decimating in other communities as much as it is in communities of color, nobody would be out protesting that we need to hurry up and get back to work.
I fear you're right. And I'm just going to retreat to numbers, because I don't know how to retreat. I don't know. African Americans are 13% of the US population. They're 27% of the known COVID-19 deaths. I hope, that's a crazy word, I hope some of that is the biology. And it could be. It could be a genetic factor. We've seen that before. But I know huge amount of it's not. And a huge amount of it is just the underlying health deficit and care deficit that already exists, and then compounded by what is only described as some degree of institutional racism on the presentation for treatment.
It's so devastating.
Sorry?
It's devastating, right? The thoughts about it are devastating. And almost too painful to ponder.
Yeah. You know, I don't know, this might be so silly as maybe we'll cut it, please. I'm a privileged white kid, and let's please cut this. But there's a song by Michael Jackson, "They Just Don't Care About Us." And I remember hearing that as a younger person, like, what? I don't get it. And, you know, as I got a little more aware, I certainly get it. And now there's a lot of people that I think that song's singing about.
I mean, I'll say this, right? So my husband is a privileged white kid too. And so we often have very spirited conversations in our house, because I think, he's had many epiphanies being married to me. And sometimes they feel painful, right? Because I think sometimes some of the things that I'm talking about and say make him in some way feel complicit. in something that he had no part in building, but it's but benefited from, right? So I think it's, you know, I just think we have so much work to do, and there's plenty of people with their sleeves rolled up, ready to do it. We need leaders that are going to put people first in government, federal, state, local. We need foundations and grant makers that are going to put people first, so that their dollars can pivot and continue to do all the right things that I know was their goal when they started their foundation, but somewhere they get lost in the widgets. So I think it's just such a critical time. I think the America can heal from this if we do all the right things. Like, we really can. We can. I feel like the YW Tri-County area and the YW as a national movement is going to emerge from this stronger, because we've been able to lean into the mission and really figure out how to continue to make it work and implement it. And I think that if we can, if the rest of the country can do that, like, I think we can come out of this with really looking at all of the ways that we're divided. I think on Friday when Tom was talking, he talked about divisions. Like, that was kind of how the conversation unfolded. You were talking about the divisions, and that was when we started talking about the education of our children and how, you know, it's easy to say, well, okay, those kids, some kids are getting educated and some aren't. And I think it's easy to look at children as with their futures, but children are our future. Like, us right now, I'm the last year of the baby boomers. And they are our future, and we have to put them first.
And we can't put them first unless we put you first. So the Keepers, I don't know much about it. The name's great. So the Stacys need to be taken care of too, right? Like, you know, you're putting one foot in front of the other. You're service oriented. You're putting people first. You're thinking about dignity for all. You're able to get on your horse every day. But I'm sure there's times when you're just beat up, and I don't know, Tom. I'm guess I'm just asking you and TMP, and what can we possibly do? And the answer might be nothing. Or what can you possibly do? What can anyone possibly do? Not just to support the work of the YWs on all the organizations, but is there something to help people like Stacy, these cornerstones who are putting all these things together? You know, keep your sanity, regain your sanity. I don't know. Where do you go for your solace? What shoulder do you cry on? How do you get help for you?
I don't really cry. I think, you know, I don't. I'm not a crier, although I have cried. I've cried more.
Take it metaphorically. Started. Metaphorically.
Metaphorically, I think, you know how, like, some people can lift 5 pounds and some people can lift 750 pounds or whatever it is, right? Like, I can bench about 500, right? I'm good. And I feel like I'm energized by my work and the fact that there's more work to do and we're making a difference and we're shining a light on other people didn't know, and we help galvanize people to pay attention to this and act on it. I think that energizes me to keep getting on that horse that you, the metaphorical horse. But I think that, you know, I really like my work. I love the mission of the YW. I think that it's critical at this time. And that, you know, I don't have time to cry, to be honest. I don't have time to cry.
You know, something I find so interesting, and a lot of what you had to say, Stacy, is hard to hear. It, you know, it hurts. I'll be fine. But it's a painful reality, and it's given such clarity at this moment. I mean, just the numbers, RP. You know, you tie the narrative to the number, and it's a painful thing to hear. And the way you described the I don't remember exactly They don't care about us. I think that's what you said. Does that sound right? It's exactly what I heard up the river. It's exactly what I heard in Hannibal, Missouri. It's exactly what I heard in Red Wing, Minnesota. You know, and I think this, RP, I'm going to go back here. I'm sorry, but MSNBC, Fox, figure out the best way to make us enemies beginning does not end in a good place, you know? And I think a lot of it, I mean, if I could snap my fingers, and I can't, I'll try. I mean, and I hope we'll all try. It's what we were doing the other day, Stacey, on Friday, is if people talk to each other. But the minute you start walking towards other people, and you know, just this, I mean, granted, this is virtual, but I'm so glad, Stacey, you and I had an opportunity to connect on Friday, because all of a sudden my world opened up a little bit. And at the same time, yesterday when I'm in Hannibal, Missouri, which, by the way, all these cities, when you come down, including St. Louis today, but this is mostly because of COVID, are very old school and running down. I mean, they're not pretty pictures. You know, these are lots of poverty, lots of problems. They feel put upon too. You know, you feel like, you know, the basket of deplorables was sort of like, you guys stay out of our modern culture. Anyway, I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but conversation is so important. It's so meaningful. And maybe, you know, more conversations like these is just the beginning of something that can be valuable. And I so want to believe, Stacey, what you just said, which is, we're going to come out of this. And again, these are my words. I'm not sure if you said it exactly like this. We're going to come out of this better and stronger. I really want to believe that. I'm very hopeful for it, but I'm also a little anxious about it too.
I think if we're intentional about putting people first, we'll come out of it better and stronger. That's really what it is. I think if we...
Stacey, I want to just, can we talk about that for a minute? Because
yes,
here's what's so important. I believe you when you say that. I believe you when you say putting people first. Now, the only reason I'm saying that is because you're not the first person to say that to me, but I don't actually believe it. They might prioritize people, but they're actually putting people like third or fifth. I think what you're saying about putting people first is very specific. People first. And I just want people to hear what you are saying, Stacey, because it's very easy to put, I got to pay the bills first. It's very easy to put, I got to do my marketing first. It's very easy to put, I got to grow my business first. If you actually put people first, and you are talking about your people you work with, but you're also talking about the people you serve.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if, right? Like, I am going to help that person in the way they need it, and I'm going to do that first. And it may look illogical in the beginning.
Yeah,
but the logic will emerge out of that process, and that's what Stacey's trying to say. And I just want to put a point on it.
Yes.
So, Tom, you believe that statement because you trust Stacey. You don't know her that well. This is maybe the second time you guys have met, but you trust Stacey. Stacey is a leader. We're herd animals. Herd animals. We need leaders. She's a leader. She's trustworthy. You trust her. It's actually a sense of comfort. We don't have leadership right now in a lot of the places we traditionally look for it. And we have people pulling us apart at the same time. And so when we find leaders like Stacey, when we're gifted, when we're graced by their presence, that literally is a sense of guidance and comfort, and it's inarguably good thing. And the more a voice like Stacey's can be in front of more people, the more comfort there will be, the less anxiety there'll be, and the less division there will be. She's a leader, you can trust her. It's obvious. And when she says things like putting people first, dignity for all, you believe it. And I'm literally just saying it back. Like, it's like I can feel my anxiety going down. It's a very deeply animal aspect of who we are. And so since we don't have the leadership where we traditionally look for it right now, it's a huge grace that we find in other places. And we have to amplify those leaders the best we can. I'd say that's an important mission for this little conversation we have, is find leaders like this and amplify their message so other people can hear the message that matters, but also reduce anxiety a little bit.
I think that's important. I think that's a huge, that is something that I wear as a, it is my job to reduce the anxiety of my team so they can reduce the anxiety of their teams and the people they serve, for sure. It's probably a big reason I rarely cry. I'm, you know, people call me unflappable. Like I really, you know, I'm not too happy. I'm not too sad. I'm just like, hey, this is what we need to do. Let's get at it, right? And I think that part is important to, like you say, instill confidence that I'm going to help you get through this. That's my job, to help people get through this with their dignity the best that I can. That's everybody's job, though. It's everybody's job, for sure.
So, guys, not only are we running out of time, but I'm running out of battery. This has been great, Stacy. It's been very helpful. One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to, yeah, it really has. And just such a layer of information that's so useful. I'm going to think about this question of some of the kinds of conversations that we can have, because, you know, unfortunately there are these successful organizations, successful from a financial perspective, successful from a distribution perspective, who kind of don't want us to know all the truth. And that's, I'm not saying they wake up saying, how can we not tell them the truth? I am saying they wake up thinking the super concise negativity sells. Like, again, they wouldn't use that language, but it's true. You know, how can
fear,
dramatic dislike, fear, how can dramatic dislike and fear serve my business today? And it sets in motion so many things, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. And, you know, to me, such an important part of the conversation is, one, knowing some of the things that Stacy just has shared with us today, because most people don't know all this stuff, the basic information, the data. And then the next layer of the kinds of people and the hardworking people like you, Stacy, who are doing these things every day and the challenges they face, you know, in a moment of information overload, if the emotion, the negative emotion wins out, there's no room for anything else.
That's right.
So how might we create conversations that are helpful in this regard? And I'm going to think about that, and maybe we can even do it on this trip. Maybe I can find some people we could reconvene and try something like that. So
that's a great idea.
So Stacy, thank you so much for being with us today. We'll be rooting for you. We'll check in on you. I hope to see you in another Keepers meeting as well. And RP, thank you as always. So we'll see all you guys soon.
Thanks,
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Tom. This was awesome.
Thank you.